Hey party people, it is October the 19th, 2021, and the time in Egypt is 4:37 p.m. How y'all doing? I'm doing good. I'm hanging in there. I'm about to, get into the month of October is coming to a close. So I'm hanging in here. I want to thank y'all for being really, really patient with me. One of my original subscribers was like, can I resubscribe now? And what I want to tell my original subscribers is that y'all all can resubscribe. I thought it was a grand idea to give people like cheaper options, and nobody really responded. More people started listening to the podcast. So I'm not really sure how Anchor works. I'm still trying to figure that out. But it seemed like fewer people could listen to the podcast, but I had actual paid subscribers. And then when I flipped to the other option, it knocked my paid subscribers off, but it gave more people the opportunity to listen, and it gave them a cheaper option. And that's just not going to work. Not because of the money, but because of the access. I mean, I will take my faithful 4 or 5 people who were subscribed and who were paying monthly than a bunch of people who just want to pop on and listen to the podcast. And I know you're like, but that means it's about the money. No, it's not. It's really about the commitment to me being in Egypt and people who want to support me, be it financially or not. Those 4 or 5 people are people who respond to the podcast, not just because they're paying for it. They were responding way before they started paying for it. So if y'all want to get back on board, you're welcome to. And if you don't, I totally understand, because I did not know that when I changed that option, Anchor would actually knock your subscriptions off. Like, it literally cut their subscriptions off. So, I can only count it up to a lesson learned. I'm still trying to learn how to do this whole podcasting thing, but this is the longest I've ever been in the podcast world. So I am now in the process of growing this podcast. I'm starting to get more responses, and people are listening. And I want to thank y'all. We're at like 1,700 listens. So I really, really appreciate that. I never thought in a million years that this would be my reality. And if you want to subscribe, just understand that you only are subscribing until June 22nd. So if you're giving $4.99 a month, you will only be doing that through June, unless, something miraculous happens to cause me to continue. You know, we might be doing 1 year in Kenya next year, for all I know. At any rate, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Shukran, shukran, shukran. All right, second on my agenda before I get into the podcast is I want to wish a very happy 50th birthday to Overton John Fully Love Shaft III. There are 3 people in my life, 3 whole ass human beings who I have known since the age of 4. We all went to nursery school together at Mount Tabor, and that is Overton Fully Love, Monica Rockmore, and Heather Smith Van Duan. My ride or dies, long life friends. And today, Overton turns 50, and I want to wish him a very happy birthday. All right, so we're going to get into this podcast. So before I came to Egypt, and before I knew that I had actually made the cut, I had been offered the job. I had made it through the interviews, but I was in a moment of waiting for them to call me back to tell me that I had actually gotten the job. I began to vet the school. Well, not, I had already vetted them, but I began to vet deeper the school that I teach at. And as the algorithms would have it, you know how if you go search on something, all of a sudden it's popping up everywhere where you are. So one day I got a notice that a child that attended this school had been killed, had died. I didn't know any details. I just knew a child had died that went to the school. So I knew that if I got the job, that I would be coming to a moment where coming to a school that was dealing with a death. I didn't process it though, because kids die all the time. As a person who has shaken hands with death and has been like, you know what, death, you are a part of life and life is a part of you. Death is just one of those things that happens. It's actually a transitional moment where you get to actually expand into the universe. So it's actually a beautiful thing. So I didn't think anything of it. I get hired, I come here, I get my students. I learn what an intensive is. It's basically a pull-out class, but, you know, it is what it is. I start having problems with this one kid. And the more I get to know my environment, the more I get to realize what's going on, I realize that this child is the brother, the baby brother of the student that was killed. Now, we have been told, you know, give this kid some room, give him some space. He's dealing with death. But I didn't really, I was still having to piece things together. You can't just tell me something like that and I just be like, okay, going with the flow. I'm always trying to like figure out. I'm a Scorpio, y'all. It's just a part of who we are. We got to know at the core of what is going on, what is going on. So I began to kind of watch the kid. But he was also, he became one of my students. So he's in my intensive. So, you know, I'm like, I'm trying to figure out what's going on with my intensive kids. Like, what is their problem? They just need like a little bit of enhancement. Why are they separated? You know, so me and this kid end up being like Tom and Jerry. Like, can't get along, won't get along. It's just, it's the relationship is just bad. Like, I'm always like yelling at him. I'm always trying to tell him to be quiet. He wants to argue with me, everything. And he's very smart. This is what kills me about him, is that he's very smart. I'm sure I've talked to y'all about him without saying his name. But he's a very, like, manipulative type of kid. Because he's the type of kid that will play dumb to fool his friends. So he'll make another kid fail a question and then think it's a joke. So, over the past, you know, weeks, round and round and round and round, one day he came into class and he just wasn't feeling good. He said he had a headache. It was noticeable on his face. And this is when COVID had kind of snatched some of the larger groups out of the school. And I was certain that this child had COVID. So I sent him to the nurse and he didn't come to school the next day. And as much as I felt bad for him, I was actually very thankful that he did not come to school. Now let me tell you why. A, I already told y'all he was problematic. And it wasn't, he's not like a, he's problematic in the way that he's mischievous. Okay? So he's not a kid that is violent or aggressive. He's a nerd bad boy. If that is a thing, if that makes sense to you, he's a nerdy bad boy. So he has, you know, and he had these two sidekicks. Well, when he's not there, the sidekicks are paying attention. They're trying. They're reading. They're asking questions. They're engaged in the lesson. Well, as luck would have it, he did not have COVID. He was just having a down day. And when he came back, we went right back to the same old BS, you know, me having to write him up. And I told him, I said, I'm going to write you up every day until something changes. Well, the kids had a paper they had to write. A realistic fiction paper. So for 3 weeks, we were preparing to do these papers. For 3 weeks. My intensive class, I actually let them do their papers in class. We got the papers started in class so that I could make sure that they understood what was going on. When it was time to turn the papers in, two students turned their papers in. Two. When I sent out the warning, the other one turned her paper in. I had a female student who, I don't know what has happened to Angie. She disappeared. I don't know if she's at home sick with COVID or if she was new. So sometimes a new student will come and then their parents will take them back out. It's just a thing that happens in schools. So right now, I'm not really sure where she is. And then I have another student who's he's a seventh grader. So his work was going to his seventh grade teacher. So my three knuckleheads had not turned in their papers. So I turned their names in, turned it over to the higher ups, keep it moving. This particular kid finally turns his paper in. And when he turns his paper in, I sent him a thank you note. Well, last Thursday, we had blackouts at the school. Like, the electricity was like in and out, in and out. And then finally, it was just like out. We couldn't get internet, none of that. So we were in class, and he said, "Miss, have you seen the Spelling Bee movie?" Now, this is the kind of kid who I'll fuss at him, and then he'll turn around and say something to me to get on my good side. And then once I feel like, or once I think we're back in good graces, he'll go back to talking and interrupting while I'm talking and just being flat out disrespectful. So when he's asking me about this Spelling Bee movie, I'm like, "What movie?" And he's like, "It's on YouTube. You should watch it." So we had our power outages, blah, 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 blah. School is out. We have Friday and Saturday. So Friday, we were on generators over here at the teacher accommodations. Is that the fire alarm? I'm so over this place. Anyway, so we had just enough internet. The generators were on. We were running on generators. We had internet. So I tried to find this Spelling Bee movie. And I just put in Spelling Bee movie because he didn't tell me the title. He was like, "Have you seen the Spelling Bee movie?" So I put it in, and it's like four options come up. And I'm like, "I don't know none of this. I don't know what he wants me to watch." So I get to work on Sunday, and I tell him to send me the link. Now, mind you, he still hasn't turned in his paper. So Sunday night, he turns in his paper and he sends me the link. Sunday night. It's Akilah and the Bee. Now, for some reason, I've just never watched Akilah and the Bee. I don't have nothing against none of the actors that are in. It's a fabulous cast, y'all. It's like Angela Bassett, Kiki Palmer. Like, it's a fabulous cast. But Akilah and the Bee just never hit me where I needed to watch it. Like, it just never hit. But it was always in my periphery. It was always popping up. And I'm learning now that when stuff keeps popping up, just submit to it and do it, because later it's some kind of message for later. Well, anyway, it was Akilah and the Bee. I didn't watch it. He sends that to me Sunday. I didn't watch it. Because he and I have had, like, we have literally gone toe-to-toe on Sunday during school. And I'm just not even feeling him. And I had gotten to the point to where on his discipline forms, I was writing things like, "For a child who has suffered a significant loss, the behavior does not match." You know what I mean? Now, I'm no psychiatrist. I don't really know, and I don't know this kid, so his behavior to me is translating differently. I had a kid who lost his mother, and this is one of the quietest kids I'd ever had when I was back in the States. And I remember this kid coming to school one day thinking he was strong enough. And we were just doing a regular lesson. Like, we weren't doing nothing about death. We weren't doing nothing about motherhood. We were doing, like, a regular old-ass lesson. And this kid just broke down crying. So that's what I was used to. I was used to, you know, when a kid lost and tried to be strong, they tended to be quiet. They tended to be introverted. They tended to be a little less aggressive in their presence. Not this kid. This kid was like, oh, the total opposite. So we had gone toe-to-toe on Sunday. And on Monday, he was brought to me by one of the discipline hall monitors. And she asked us what happened in class the next day. And this joker starts lying. Ooh, he started lying, y'all. I could have... I could have screwed my head off and just sat it on the table. He was just lying. I said, hold up. So I finally, like, I did my Jedi mind trick, and he talked himself into a corner. She made him apologize. But that's not what I want. You see what I'm saying? Now, where I am, the teachers are not allowed to talk to the parents, and the parents are not allowed to talk to the teachers. There are people in between us, and I'm good with that. I'm good with that until a certain point. Because at a certain point, if a child's behavior won't change, then I no longer want to talk to the disciplined people. I now want to talk to your mama. So she made him apologize. So I was like, this is not going to work. So I got home Tuesday night. And I came in my room, closed the door, lit an incense, and I just had a long conversation with myself. I was like, look, I give up. I submit to the fussing. I submit to the lectures. I submit to the discipline sheet. I am no longer, what I'm doing is not working, and I got to change what I'm doing. This child has lost his brother, and it's time for me to play psychologist. It's time for me to start pulling him to the side and talking about the death of his brother. Now, why is this dangerous as an educator? It's dangerous as an educator because if something goes wrong in the process of me stepping outside of my role as just a teacher, I lose my job. However, I feel like nobody's doing their job. And after having that conversation with myself, I was like, fuck it. If I lose my job, the best thing they can do is put me back on a plane. Actually, the best thing they can do is make me pay for it. I'll go home on my own dollar, but I am not about to keep dealing with a child who y'all will not really deal with. And maybe y'all don't really know how. Maybe I don't know how they, you know, it's still something cultural to how they protect the children here. Especially children like this one. I don't know if he comes from money. I don't know. I don't know what kind of hold his people may have over the school. So I submitted. I just let go. I was like, you know what? I'm finna give these kids more equity. Oh, I had also, another thing that had happened is that Sunday I had gotten a message from my department head because my intensive class, their scores had dropped. And he was basically they about to send the troops in on me trying to figure out what I'm doing wrong. And I'm like, I'm not doing anything wrong. It's this one little one who has this magnetized effect on these other two. And in a class of seven kids, those three carry the weight. Because what they bring to the class dictates whether or not other kids learn. So I submitted. I was like, I don't know what to do, but I know what to do. So I was like, I'm finna stop my class. I'm finna stop teaching. And we finna get into some psychology. So after I had the conversation with myself last night, right before I went to bed, I put my computer open and I watched Tequila and the Bee. And I was profoundly affected because if you've ever seen Tequila and the Bee, spoiler alert, you know that this little girl lost her father, and the only thing they had between them was their love of words. You also know that the guy who mentors her, who is played by Larry Fishburne, also lost his daughter. And when I think about this kid saying, Miss, it's really a good movie, I thought it was the nerd in him initially. When I'm watching the movie, I'm thinking it's the nerd in him being attracted to the fact that this little girl can spell. Well, I already know this kid is smart. But it's not until I realize that this child has lost her father and that her mentor, her mentor has lost his daughter, that is possibly the connection. Not only that, there is this quote that they keep saying in the film that I found to be pretty intriguing. So this morning, I went into the teacher's lounge and I copied the quote and I printed it out. And this is what the quote says. It is by Marianne Williamson. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us, it is in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So, in class, I told each one of my intensive students what I absolutely loved about them. And I let it stand right there. There were no buts. I just told them what I loved about them and what they bring to the class. And then I told them what positions they're going to be starting to play in their class. My board prefix, my discipline prefix, my attendance prefix, all of that. And then I told the student who had lost his brother that I acknowledged the fact that he has lost his brother. I openly told him that. And then I apologized to him and I said, I am very sorry that I have tried to treat you as if you haven't lost a brother, because it is forcing you to come to school every day and act like nothing is wrong when something is absolutely wrong. And this classroom space is now a space for you to be safe to express yourself. It is a classroom that is safe for you to come and have a bad day. It is a classroom where every single person in this room acknowledges that you have lost your brother, and that you loved your brother, and that you miss your brother. And we are here to help you navigate that while you have to learn. And this child nodded his head and he smiled. I swear to God, y'all, he nodded his head and he smiled, and he knew in that moment that I understood exactly who he was, and that was all he needed. That was all he needed. So we did this I am exercise that I do with a lot of students who I've come across who are dealing with trauma or just need to be acknowledged or just need to feel seen. And I let who wanted to share out. And of course he shared out. And there was a line where you had to write I am, and you had to write who your favorite family member was. And he wrote, I am my big brother. And I told my class, from here on out, we're going to do a small little exercise before we start class. And at the end of the day, if somebody comes in here and tells me I cannot do that, I'll take the L. Because what we're not going to do is not do it. And this is the problem with the education system. Because sometimes teachers see and feel something different that should be happening. And because of their paychecks, because of whatever it is they have going on, they won't risk it for the sake of a child who needs it. But I will lose everything. I will lose everything so that one child can feel seen, if it'll keep them from misbehaving in my class. Because behavior is a learned trait, and it's also something that kids use as a defense mechanism against something else. Sometimes a kid is being molested at home. Sometimes a kid is having to raise their brothers and sisters while their parents are either working or being irresponsible. Sometimes a kid has a learning disability and it's causing them to act out. They don't just act out because they're designed to act out. That's always some kind of impetus behind the behavior. And then you have people who teach who scramble to get out of the classroom because they don't want to deal with the kids. And I don't want to deal with them either, but if I'm in the classroom, I'm not going to not deal with them. So, Akilah and the Bee saved my relationship with this little boy and my ability to hear him and to take in what he was saying saved our relationship. That doesn't mean it's going to still take some time because he's in his way. I mean, he's in his zone. He's set in his ways. But today and yesterday were so good. They were so good. And he's a leader, y'all. It's not like he's some ignorant ass kid. Like, this kid is a real leader. He has magnetism. And I can't even imagine what he was like when his brother was here on this campus. They probably were running it. So that was today. And today was a good day. I also introduced one of my other classes to the Negro Leagues. And I asked them, what was a Negro? They had no idea. They had no idea what a Negro was. And y'all should have seen their faces when I looked at them and said, I'm a Negro. And we went into that conversation about what it's like to be an African living in America, what it's like to be disconnected. One of the kids said, I thought you were African. I said, I am. But I don't know who my people are. I don't know what part of Africa I am from. We talked about DNA a little bit. And I knew we couldn't get real heavy into it. But what's funny is all of these little sand-colored children was like, we're dark. And they also have this idea of about real. They think real Africa. They said, no, miss, this is not real Africa. Real Africa is South Africa. So to them, real Africans are the dark-skinned people. And I said, you know what? In the United States, all of Africa is real Africa. There is no fake Africa. In America, Africa is Africa. It is the seat of civilization. They never, I was like, y'all, in America, we believe everything comes out of Africa. It is the central headquarters of civilization, that no man exists without being connected to this. So it was an enlightening conversation to have with sixth graders. It was so enlightening. They actually, when I told them we were talking about the Negro Leagues, which formulated around the 1920s, and I said, as a matter of fact, my grandfathers, the Negro League men are the same age that my grandfathers were. So I said, my grandfathers would go to Negro League games and they probably knew some of the players. When I said that, these kids started clapping. They started applauding. When I said, my grandmother's mother, my grandmother's mother's mother was an enslaved African, they gasped like they couldn't believe it. They have no clue who we are or what we are or how we are or when we are. They have no clue, y'all. It's not being taught. So this critical race theory is worldwide. It's not just a United States thing of keeping people disconnected from each other of based on history. It's worldwide. And the only reason I was able to open the door is because we were talking about the Negro Leagues. And I had to be careful because I'm always thinking about what these kids are about to go home and tell their parents. So I'm always having to like be ready to pack my bags and go, because what I'm not finna do is act like this is not something that I'm connected to and that I can connect these students to. And today they connected. They were asking me questions. I was like, what? They was like, so can a white woman have a black baby? I was like, only if she meets a black man. Can a black woman have a white baby? Absolutely. Absolutely. They were amazed. And I know some of y'all would be like, that's not true, Kamika. I'm like, you better study your history. Y'all better study. You better don't come to me with this mess. We are a great people who have been divided and conquered. But we are slowly getting back to each other. And it is because of moments like this that I have been able to come all the way over to Egypt and be in front of some sixth graders who have no clue, but who have all the questions. And I can't answer all of the questions, but the questions that I can answer in the name of education, in the name of whatever subject matter we're teaching, those few little questions will go a long way. And evil cannot prevail over our people forever. And it will not prevail over our people forever. There is only one Africa. There isn't a real Africa. There isn't a fake Africa. There isn't, you know, a divided Africa. There's only one Africa. And it is the most powerful place on the planet. And it is still waiting. It is still waiting for its inhabitants and its lost children to be ready and encouraged to return to it in full bloom. We cannot be worried about being sensitive to racism. Racism's got to go. It's a very bad thing. And you have to be able to look at it in the face and realize that there's fear there. As a matter of fact, the dream that I had last night, I had a piece of a dream last night where I was down in the country and bulldozers had been coming through, and there was this huge road of red dirt that had been opened up. But around me were these houses that had Confederate flags hanging from them. But I knew in my heart of hearts that the Confederate flags were outdated, and that new road that was being paved was a safety road. That it meant that things are changing, things are about to change. Because I have land in the country, and one of the things that I had to unpack last night was, stop being afraid to build on your land, because historically it's been a place where black people were in, quote unquote, in their place. There's a lot of people from Texas A&M down there, and historically that has just meant racism. It has just meant, you know, crosses burning. It has just meant, you know, trouble. But I was able to unpack that last night. I've started doing shadow work with myself. I feel capable, and my spirit is asking for it. As a matter of fact, let me tell y'all something. I played around the other night, two nights ago, before I went to bed. I was like, I opened myself to the ancestors. I opened myself to receiving. And I fucked around and had a dream that me, my friend Tony Patterson, and my friend Demetria Cobb were all in Highland Hills. And we were all down by the Brown Apartments. And Tony was looking for her mother. And we found her mother, who was up on a terrace looking down over us. And Barbara Brown was happy. She had head full of hair. She had on this caftan. And she was happy. There was some other older folks sitting up there with her, some men and some women. And they just looked like they were having a good time. Now, Tony's mother died of cancer several years ago. And I have yet to send her a message or anything to tell her that her mother is okay, because I'm still like, open another door if you want to. I did tell Didi. I texted Didi and I was like, girl, I'm over here playing around, but I'm not doing that anymore. If I do it, I'm gonna have to be in the States. I just can't be over here in Egypt, you know, seeing ancestors in my dreams. I just can't, y'all. It's a lot. But that happened. It was real. And I just want Toni Patterson to know that her mother is fine, that she's happy. And on some level, I think Toni has been really in prayer for her mother. I don't know if a birthday is coming up. I really don't know. But her mother showed up in the dream and she was very happy. And the smile is what did it. And I realized that her mom kind of has this Miriam Makeba kind of effect. Like, it was a weird thing. So anyway, that's it, y'all. That's the podcast for today. It's been a beautiful day. Good news is coming in. I'm blossoming. And I did random acts of kindness by sending thank you letters to all the people here on campus who have been really pivotal and helpful in helping me transition. Because I'm still waking up like, I cannot believe I still got 9-10 months to go. But it's becoming easier and better to be a resident here in Al Giza, the ghetto, Egypt. I'm signing off. Be good, be good, be good, be God. Peace.